Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the August 27th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Tuscola City Council. Governor expected to deliver news on Tuesday by David Porter. By the time the newspaper comes out, there may be some news out of Springfield via Decatur. Mayor Dan Kleiss noted Monday that he would be at the Farm Progress Show Tuesday, August 26th in Decatur, where he's expected to introduce Governor J.B. Pritzker. Sources at City Hall say Pritzker may be poised to announce the incentive agreement for the long-anticipated Cronus fertilizer plant to be built west of Tuscola. The $2.3 billion plant has been in development for nearly 15 years. The city is also still working on landing a $750 million corn wet milling plant on the former Lyondell Basell site, formerly USI Chemical Plant site. Local officials have been hinting for weeks that major announcements may be made soon on two economic development projects. The County Chronicle will post breaking news on its Facebook page. In other business, the Tuscola City Council on Monday approved two new permitting programs involving alcohol consumption downtown. The two measures will allow consumers to carry and drink alcoholic beverages outside during events. The city has allowed this practice in the past. The new ordinances amend the city code to streamline the process. One of the permits will be district-wide and is geared toward downtown celebrations involving more than one business. Consumers would need to wear a wristband and use approved containers with alcohol purchased only from downtown vendors. The area, which includes a community building and Kleiss Plaza, is between Main and Park Streets, east and west, and Pembroke and North Central to the north and south. Kleiss said this will allow bar patrons to carry their drinks outside to listen to the band. The other permit would allow for consumption of alcohol anywhere in the permitted business's property, such as a parking lot, and would require fencing to restrain the crowd. There is no fencing requirement for the district permit, as the streets divide the area where the drinks can be carried. The new code allows the liquor commissioner, Mayor Kleiss, to issue the permits. Kleiss said that the two other people on the liquor board were in agreement with the new ordinances. Also Monday, the council approved $27,000 to Spear Construction to refurbish the pool filter at Irvin Park. Drew Howell, city administrator, said no one on the staff can remember the last time the sand filter was cleaned and repaired. It's a one-time expense, he said. He added that due to an electrical issue, the pool is closed for the remainder of the season. Beginning in September, the city plans to start remodeling the pool house and repairing the tube slide at the pool. On the consent agenda, the council approved a payment of $137,000 to Ezel Excavation for tearing down the old church at 307 South Court. A change order of $4,100 also was approved for Swingler Construction on the police station renovation. Hall noted that the Swingler bill had not been received yet, so the vote approved the change order, not the payment. It will be part of their final payment, he said. In his written report, Howell noted that Swingler split the cost of the change order 50-50 with the city. Also on the consent agenda, a mini-market at Festival Corner downtown was approved for Cindy Little on September 27th. Hall also noted that chip and oil application on city roads is scheduled to begin September 2nd. The next article, Arthur Village Board, Unusually High Amount of Police Calls in July, by Ariana Cherry. Trustee Matt Bernius read the following statement at the August 19th Village Board meeting. It is with great sadness that we share the passing of former Village Trustee David Dave Tiffin, who dedicated over 10 years of service to our community. Dave's steady leadership, warm personality, and commitment to the Village made a lasting impact that will be deeply missed. Beyond his role as trustee, Dave was a devoted family man who loved nothing more than cheering on his kids and grandkids, spending time on the golf course, fishing, and enjoying life in Arthur with friends and neighbors. Visitation and a celebration of life will be held on Saturday, September 6th at Penn Station, with burial to follow on Sunday, September 7th at the Arthur Cemetery. We extend our heartfelt condolences to Dave's family and friends. His legacy of service and love for this community will not be forgotten. Chief Elliot Tinnen shared his police report, which was quite busy compared to average months. According to Tinnen, the Arthur Police Department experienced an incredibly high volume of service calls last month, opening 31 new cases compared to the usual average of 12. He attributed this surge to significant issues within the town. Despite the high number of cases initiated, only three remain under investigation, with the majority having been resolved. A notable portion of these cases involved individuals who were not residents of Arthur, he said. Other items are discussed and voted on. Chief Tinnen shared his appreciation for everyone who helped during the fireworks back in June. He thanked Paulie's, who fed the police officers and donated barbecue, and Beachy's bulk food gave the officers significant discounted water. He also thanked the Illinois State Police, Arthur Ambulance Service, and Arthur Street Department for their assistance. Approved temporary suspension of the sign ordinance allowing signage on boulevards during the September 4th through 6th townwide garage sales. No electronic recycling during the city cleanup days. Approved trick-or-treat hours to be held on October 31st from 4 to 9 p.m. A total of $93,000 in expenditures was reported. The next article, Tuscola School Board Accept Donations in Short Meeting by Ben Crane. The Tuscola School Board accepted $602 in donations at their August meeting on Monday night, with $300 from an anonymous donor for Help a Child and $302 from Kona ICE for Positive Behavior Committee. The board also approved Press Policy 119 before approving minutes from the special meeting on July 24th, the regular meeting on July 28th, and another special meeting on August 7th. Bills were approved in the amount of $1,218,000, and the treasurer and bookkeeper reports were also approved. The board approved the tentative budget and set a hearing for September 29th, as well as moving their meeting to the same date. Finally, the board approved switching over their district attorney to Franjek to follow their current attorney, Brandon Wright. North Ward principal Jordan Lawyers reported that there were 12 new staff members at the school this year, including 7 teachers, 4 paraprofessionals, and 1 speech-language pathologist. She also noted that the total enrollment is 345, with 47 in pre-K, 66 in kindergarten, 56 in first grade, 52 in second grade, 67 in third grade, and 57 in fourth grade. Lawyers said that there was a great turnout for Meet the Teacher Night with the Positive Behold Behavior Company and Popsicles. Some behavior important dates she noted were the sorting party for House on September 10th, and that North Ward is bringing back a meet and greet in the gym once a week on Monday morning. East Prairie Principal Jared Van Osdell noted enrollment members of school as well as at 260 total. There are 58 fifth graders, 65 sixth graders, 71 seventh graders, and 66 eighth graders. The number reflects a 12-student drop compared to last year. Van Osdell said that EP has 5 new staff, including 2 paraprofessionals and 3 teachers. He also thanked the summer maintenance staff for all their hard work in the building. Some important dates he mentioned include 5th grade band night after school on September 11th and girls basketball beginning on September 15th. Tuscola High School principal Justin Bozarth also began by informing the board of the enrollment of the school, which is 295 this year, down from 303 last year. There are 72 freshmen, 76 sophomores, 71 juniors, 75 seniors, and 1 postgraduate adult. Some notable dates Bozarth mentioned were the school picture day on September 9th and homecoming week the week of September 22nd. We're looking forward to celebrating 50 years of female athletes at TCHS, he said. In Superintendent Gary Alexander's report, he said that Daryl Spillman, Bob Devlin, Roger Warner, Judd Wynicke, Jessica Young, and Rusty Yandis all attended the 2025 Joint Annual Conference. He also received 2 Freedom of Information Act requests, one from the Smart Procure for vendors from the past 6 months, and Jacob Long for a list of employees, their titles, and start dates. Alexander totaled the district's enrollment at 944 with pre-K this year. The next article, Douglas County Board OKs Animal Control Deputy Administrator by Ben Crane. The Douglas County Board approved a contract between Dr. Kate Bruckner and the county in the amount of $5,000 at their meeting last Wednesday morning. According to the agreement, Bruckner, the new deputy administrator, will attend meetings for the Animal Control Subcommittee, oversee compliance with all levels of laws and regulation, and oversee the condition of the shelter and any other work that needs to be done. Agreement runs from August 20th to December 31st of this year. Board member Bibby Appleby told her colleagues that the agreement was made because of ongoing reservations at the animal shelter, namely the installation of a surgical wing. "We're going to be saving a boatload of money," she said. The board also approved Resolution 25R20, which saw County Engineer Jim Crane's salary rise from $164,000, a 9% increase from $149,000. Board member Gary Luth explained that the county has followed guidance from the state regarding Crane's salary, and due to recent salary restructuring at the Illinois Department of Transportation, his salary was increased. Crane's estimated expenses were set at $1,082,000 of federal surface transportation program funds allocated to Douglas County that are going to the Department of Transportation in return from an equal amount of state funds to be distributed to the Douglas County Motor Fuel Tax Fund for payment of 50% of Crane's salary beginning October 1st of this year and ending September 30th, 2026. The board approved a county bridge fund petition for Sargent Road District with an estimated cost of $69,000, with requested assistance of $34,000 from the county. The township will remove an existing concrete box culvert and replace it with one that has adequate hydraulic capacity, roadway approaches, and other items of related construction. To end agenda item, as the board approved two resolutions that were cancellations of certificates of purchase at 20 Perks Trailer Court, Lot 20, and 701 North Carrico, Lot 51. To end the meeting, Frank Lincoln, who is speaking on behalf of the Civil War group that meets in the Grand Army Republican Room inside of the Douglas County Courthouse, addressed Douglas County Sheriff Nathan Chaplin, who was in attendance. Of chaplain duties, he is considered the custodian of the courthouse, among other things. So I brought in here today in hope that as your statutory duty that by the third Tuesday of September it will be replaced, Lincoln said to Chaplin, holding out a burnt-out light bulb. Do I still get popcorn? Chaplin rebutted. We'll have popcorn, said Lincoln, in a room full of laughter, concluding the meeting. The next article, Arthur School Board, Arthur High Students to be Displaced During Rebuild, by Ben Crane. Arthur CUSD number 305 students will vacate Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond High School for the 2026-27 school year as part of a health and life safety aided reconstruction project following action taken by the school board at its meeting in Lovington last Wednesday night. Superintendent Shannon Cheek presented two options for the project. The first called for phasing construction while students remained in the building, a process that would stretch a timeline to 2.5 years and add an estimated $4.1 million to the cost. Much of that increase would come from temporary facilities, including $1.7 to $1.8 million for portable classrooms. Majority of that money would be spent with nothing to show for it, Cheek said, adding that phasing would also be much more strenuous on everyone. The second option, approved by the board, will require vacating the high school for 1 year. Tear down of the existing building is scheduled to begin summer of 2026, with construction lasting through the 2026-27 school year. The project is expected to finish by August 2027, though Cheek said a worst-case scenario could push completion into the September due to delays in building the gym and locker rooms. Under the plan, high school students would attend classes at one of the district's other three buildings. Several board members discussed the possibility of moving high school students to Lovington Grade School, with Lovington students relocating to Arthur Grade School for the year. We're not replacing 57,000 square feet with 75,000 square feet. We have to match. That's how health and life safety works, Cheek told the board. He said more details will be finalized soon. The accelerator is going to be pushed down from here on out. Cheek also presented financing options for the project. A 15-year bond would carry about $3.84 million in interest, while extending 20 years would raise the total to roughly $4.07 million. A 25-year repayment plan would result in the highest interest of about $4.42 million. Longer bonds would spread the payments out and lower the projected annual tax rate. Current estimates are 4.15% for 15 years, 3.98% for 20 years, and 3.92% for 25 years. An option to begin with a reduced rate the first year before shifting into a consistent rate would add between $350,000 and $444,000 in interest, depending on the term. Tax rate comparisons show the district would remain in the middle of the range among nearby communities. Current rates range from 3.17% in Windsor to 4.99% in Salt Fork, with Tuscola, Central A&M, and Mount Pulaski all higher than Arthur's projected rate. Cheek reported that new cameras, phones, intercoms, and security systems were installed in all four district buildings by Hart Technologies. Staff received training on these upgrades, and work continues to integrate paging with the classroom devices. At Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond High School, Principal Stephanie Siegmiller reported an enrollment of 292 students, with 15 students attending alternative programs. The year began with a school-wide assembly pep rally and carnival lunch. Nearly 90% of freshmen attended an icebreaker event, while seniors celebrated their last first week with a sunrise breakfast at Wilson Field. The school also received a $10,000 donation from Tim Trust to help replace banned instruments. Assistant Principal and Athletic Director Nathan Seal reported fall sports practices began August 11th with 52 football players, 24 volleyball players, 20 soccer athletes, 10 cross-country runners, 13 golfers, and 30 marching band members. Junior high baseball and softball seasons also opened. At Atwood Hammond Grade School, Principal Christopher Foreman said the summer work included new landscaping tile, cameras, and phones. Newly built pickleball courts added in partnership with the village have already been heavily used. Arthur Grade School Principal Andrew Peralta said that custodians prepared the building over the summer and welcomed students with a first night event. New staff include two second grade teachers, a physical education teacher, a speech pathologist, an interventionist, and a secretary. Lovington Grade School Principal Marla Graham reported strong family turnout for the first night event despite rainy weather. The school added new fencing and landscaping to improve playground security and completed an outdoor classroom. The Tim Trust supported the school with funds for a Gaga ball pit mat, a lunchroom table, and contributions to the backpack program. The board also approved the fiscal year 26 tentative budget and a contract with Martin Engineering for soil testing and surveying services. In personnel matters, the board accepted the resignation of high school special education teacher Heather Strack and hired Sarah Varner as her replacement. At Atwood Hammond, Shelley Ellis was hired as a special education teacher, replacing Cameron Thrasher. The board also accepted the resignation of district school nurse Cheyenne Miller and Atwood Hammond social worker Taylor Horns and approved Caitlin Likens as district nurse. Among non-certified staff, the board accepted the resignation of Courtney Hall as a paraprofessional at Atwood Hammond. In extracurricular positions, the board approved the Chiltern Ingham as a volunteer assistant soccer coach, Adam Reel as volunteer assistant football coach, and Chris Crabtree as volunteer assistant boys basketball coach. Hall resigned as junior high assistant girls track coach and junior high volunteer cross country coach, while Jody Kaufman resigned as head high school softball coach. The next first page article, Arcola native Leah Whiteman leaves $10 million estate to preserve round barns, provided by the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. By all accounts, Arcola native Leah Jane Whiteman was a loyal friend and daughter, a dedicated professional and very private person. When she passed away on November 18, 2024, at the age of 84, she demonstrated her deep connection to her upbringing on an Illinois farm. She left an estate valued at $10 million to name and sustain the three historic round barns at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We are honored by Ms. Whiteman's generosity and foresight, said Dr. Peter Constable, Dean of the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. The round barns stand as monuments to the state's agricultural foundation and the university's many contributions to that industry. Her gift will allow us to preserve these structures and restore them so they continue to provide beauty and utility. The Veterinary College has occupied the land adjacent to the barn since 1970s. In 2023, the campus assigned oversight of the easternmost barn, which is nearest a veterinary teaching hospital, and its adjacent farmhouse to the College of Veterinary Medicine. Recently, the college took on management of the other two barns as well. Leo grew up on a farm near Arcola, shared Christine Dietrich, Associate Dean for the Advancement at the College of Veterinary Medicine. There was a round barn not far from the house she lived in. Her friends and relatives have told us these barns held a special place in her heart. Leah Whiteman was born in 1940 to James and Fern Whiteman. Her father was a tenant farmer and her mother operated a beauty parlor from their home. Don Overton, a close friend of Whiteman, recalls that the farm was operating three teams of horses and two to three hired hands. Of course, like all children of farm families, Leah and her brother Jim worked on the farm. They were also among the last generation of rural Illinois to attend primary schools in a one-room schoolhouse. Janet Stumeyer, one of Leah's cousins, recalls fishing with Leah at a creek near the Whiteman house. We attached string to long sticks and baited the string by tying on pieces of hot dog. Said Stumeyer, we caught crawdads that way. Down the road from the Whiteman House was a round barn built in 1911, around the same time as the University of Illinois round barns. Indeed, the university structures were intended to showcase the benefits of round barns for dairy operations and encourage their construction, as documented in a 1910 treatise on the subject produced by the university's Agricultural Experimental Station. Leah Whiteman graduated from Arcola High School, one of 31 members of the class of 1958. She enrolled at the University of Illinois, but paused her studies after 3 years. She eventually completed a bachelor's degree in 1977. Around 1963, Whiteman took a job at the University of Illinois bookstore. A mutual friend introduced her to Barbara Clark Nacoon, a woman from Oakland in Coles County, just 15 miles east of Arcola, who was also moving to Champaign. The two women became roommates and lifelong friends. We shared an apartment near the intersection of John Street and Mattis Avenue for 3 or 4 years, said Clark. At that time, it was the westernmost edge of Champaign. While the two women worked hard at their jobs, they truly enjoyed their free time. One time we took a train to Aspen, Colorado for a school trip and had more fun than you can think of, recalled Clark. Upon returning to Chicago's Union Station after this trip, the women found themselves in the midst of a terrible snowstorm. All transportation out of Chicago had shut down. Somehow, they were able to hitch a ride on a bus that was taking a group of airmen to Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul. We got on the bus and sat right behind the driver, said Clark. The driver apparently took a shine to the woman because after dropping off the airmen, he agreed to drive Barbara and Leah all the way to Champaign. About a year after Whiteman and Clark became roommates, they met another person from the area where they were raised. Don Overton was raised in Hume, a small town in Edgar County less than 25 miles from Arcola. Overton had earned a degree in accounting from Eastern Illinois University in 1963. After working at Chicago Air Business for 1 year, he decided to return to Central Illinois, taking a position as a teacher at the annex to Champaign Central High School. He also entered a master's degree program in accounting at the University of Illinois, which he completed in 1968. In 1967, the Central High Annex transitioned to a newly built facility called Centennial High School. Overton soon became the chair of the school's business education department and eventually held an administrative position within the Unit 4 school district. Overton maintained a close friendship with the Whiteman throughout her house. Life changed for both women after their few years together. Barbara got married and Leah was hired to create and manage the bookstore for brand new Parkland Community College, which was established by voter referendum in the spring of 1966 and first offered classes in the fall of 1967. She was the third person hired for the new college, said Clark. Before the current campus was built, classes were held in downtown Champaign. The bookstore was housed in the basement of the Gregory School, a former elementary school on Columbia Avenue near Randolph Street. Whiteman became very active in the National Association of College Stores, a professional trade association for a collegiate retailing industry. She traveled frequently to attend trade shows and held elected office in the organization at the national level. John Surma, former vice president of administrative services at Parkland College, supervised Whiteman. Leah dedicated her working life to Parkland as the bookstore manager, he recalled. Outside of work, Whiteman enjoyed traveling and collecting, often frequenting estate and garage sales. She visited her family members in the Arcola and Shelbyville areas nearly every weekend. According to Clark, Whiteman collected paintings, jewelry, and Abraham Lincoln memorabilia, among other things. Leah liked barns and liked talking about them. She even owned a painting of two barns by Joyce Parkhill, a well-known local artist, said Clark. Leah lived a very frugal life, but she loved going to estate sales. She acquired a lot of jewelry that way. When we both retired, we used to meet every Saturday morning at Art Mart for coffee, and Leah would show off her latest pair of earrings and related to the season, like Halloween. After the death of Whiteman's father in 1977, her mother continued living in the farmhouse. Clark recalled that Whiteman and Overton drove to the farm every weekend to help Leah's mother and continued to visit weekly after the mother moved into a nursing home. They also took Leah's mother to see her sister who lived in Shelbyville, after whom Leah was named. Whiteman's mother died in 2009. Her brother lived in Florida, also preceded Whiteman in death. A few years before her death, Whiteman contacted the University of Illinois Foundation to discuss her interest in leaving her estate to support the university's round barns. She also shared her intentions with both Clark and Overton. Her conservative lifestyle, along with owning rental properties and investing wisely, had led to a very sizable estate. The university's Illinois Experimental Dairy Farm Historic District, with its iconic trio of round barns, earned a place in the National Register of Historic Places in 1994. At that time, the barns were actively being used. The first of the barns, known as the 20-acre dairy barn, was completed in 1908. The College of Veterinary Medicine has requested bids to restore the exterior of this barn and its adjacent farmhouse. The two other barns, called the Dairy Horse Barn and the Dairy Experiment Barn, were completed in 1910 and 1912, respectively, each sited to the west of the others. The college is planning to move its farrier practice into the middle barn. Today, all three barns need structural repairs and updates to allow them to remain a campus landmark. The generous gift from Leah Whiteman ensures they will continue to serve the University and College of Veterinary Medicine while representing and preserving the rich history of Illinois agriculture for future generations. And the last first page article, Where Does He Live? Residency Question Shadows Murdoch Road Commissioner by Ben Crane. Allegations from a government watch group have placed Murdoch's Township Highway Commissioner William Deckard at the center of a residency dispute. The case has drawn in county officials, state law, and the quirks of rural record keeping. The Edgar County watchdogs say Deckard does not live in the township he serves. They point to a homestead exemption on a Coles County property in his name and a voter registration tied to what they call a bogus Murdoch address. The group argues his seat should be considered vacant by law under the state election rules requiring officials to reside in the districts they represent. A closer look at the public records and interviews with officials show a more complicated story, one shaped by system errors, small-town exemptions in state law, and the reality that in Murdoch, where no one receives home mail delivery, an address can be hard to pin down. Township Supervisor Amy Walsh disputes the watchdog's interpretation. "It is not under scrutiny," Walsh said. And furthermore, on their website, the Edgar County watchdogs cite the wrong actual code. There are different rules that apply, and we have reached out to township officials in Illinois, and that is the information that we received. She added that the town Ship has no mail delivery, so officials list post office boxes. I know it looks coincidental that of the seven of us, six of us on the board, plus the road commissioner, that is his only one that's listed with a P.O. box, Walsh said. That's right, because in Murdoch Township there is no mail delivery. There is a legal wrinkle. The small township exemption Walsh cites applies only when a commissioner is appointed because no qualified resident is willing to serve. Deckard was not appointed. He was elected during the consolidated election on April 1st. Under state law, an elected commissioner must still be both a voter and a resident of the township. Residency under Illinois law involves more than signing a lease. Courts often look at a person's domicile, where they intend to make their permanent home, which can include many factors like where they sleep most nights, where they keep personal belongings, and what address is on their driver's license. Whether Deckard's rental in Murdoch meets that standard is one of the questions now under review. Part of the controversy stems from Deckard's voter registration, which showed him at 103 West Main Street in Murdoch. Douglas County Clerk Judy Pollack explains how that happened. The issue had nothing to do with him, Pollack said. He got what he was given. Pollack said the problem came from a new voter registration system. The long and short of that story is we just went into a new voter registration system. We're sending out voter ID cards to the entire county. We're walking our way through a brand new system, and we're encountering some issues. So the real address to that property is 101 West Main Street per 911. Our election mapping mapped it at 103. She added that the mismatch was being corrected through the city's GIS consortium. The Coles County homestead exemption has also raised questions. Critics argue it shows Deckard's primary residence is across the county line. Coles County Supervisor of Assessments Michelle Babb said the exemption is still active. As of January, there is an exemption, Babb said, adding that there are no flags that tell me otherwise. She also noted that exemptions in her office automatically renew and require no fresh paperwork. Homestead exemptions lower the property tax bill on a person's primary residence. For critics, Deckard's continued claim in Coles County raises questions about whether he's receiving financial benefit for declaring one residence while serving at another. Babbs emphasized, however, the exemption does not affect his standing as commissioner. The commissioner's landlord says Deckard does live in Murdoch. Yes, he's resided there for some time, said Austin Apgar, who owns the property. Apgar confirmed that Decker signed a rental agreement on September 22, 2021. By the time of the April 2025 election, he had been renting in Murdoch for more than 3 years. Coles County records show that Deckard and his late wife Teresa bought the house in rural Oakland in March 2021. She died in January 2024. Her obituary noted that she was a 1970 graduate of Villa Grove High School. Records from Pollack's office also show Deckard has voted in Douglas County elections since 1989. There is no record of him voting in Coles County. Under Illinois law, a person may have multiple residences but only one domicile, which is defined as one's place of permanent residency. Voting rights and property tax exemptions are tied to the domicile, not alternative residences. Douglas County State's Attorney Robert Krosick confirmed the matter is being reviewed. This matter is presently under investigation, Krosick said. The investigation is ongoing and not yet complete. What happens next is unclear. If investigators decide Deckard did not meet residency requirements, then the issue must be taken to court through quo warranto action, a legal process for challenging whether someone is entitled to hold office. Such actions are typically brought by the state's attorney, although in some cases a voter may seek court approval to file one. The only question in the Coles County exemption that could prompt a separate review of the assessor's office are state tax officials. We'll move now to the obituaries. Joe Van McCoskey, 90 of Hinsborough, passed away at 9 a.m. on Friday, August 22nd at his home. Funeral services were held Tuesday, August 26th at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. The Reverend Gary Livesay officiated. Burial was in the Van Hoos Cemetery in rural Hinesboro. Visitation was held before the funeral on Tuesday at the funeral home. Rick Robertson, 64, of Mattoon, passed away at 5:13 p.m. on Sunday, August 24, 2025, at his residence. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, August 30th, Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola. Burial will follow at the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, August 29th, at the funeral home. Larry W. Bailey, 79, of Cerro Gordo, passed away in the early hours of August 21, 2025 at Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello. Graveside service was held Tuesday, August 26 at Cerro Gordo Cemetery with military honors by the U.S. Navy and Cerro Gordo American Legion Post 117. And finally, Michael Huntington has died. He will be interred in Arcola at a future date in a private family ceremony. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerke saying goodbye and see you again next week.